Good morning.
Good morning.
You sounded good this morning, singing. I love that song, Waymaker. I think it's one of the best worship songs written here in the last few years. And God is a waymaker. You look at all throughout the Bible and ways that He made ways for His people, and He'll make ways for us today too. We're going to continue in our series on the parables of Jesus, and I have a longer sermon today, so I feel like I need to jump right on the end because we don't need to talk about the two. Last week we covered the Pharisee and the tax collector. That's all y'all getting from me today. But last week we covered the Pharisee and the tax collector, and we talked about how we need to come to God with a humble heart, fully aware of our sin, fully aware of our shortcomings. This week God led me to teach about the parable of the rich fool. And I have never taught off this parable. And in fact, I've never really looked at it in depth, as much depth as I have this week. And so we are talking about money. We are not talking about money because our church needs your money. Our church is in good financial shape. God has continued to bless us every year. In fact, our tithes and offerings, our income continues to increase year over year. We're getting ready to celebrate our 7-year anniversary, and this year looks no different. It looks like we will break our record of last year, which will be the most we've ever brought in. So I'm not saying this to get money from you. I'm not saying because the church is in bad financial shape or anything like that. I am saying this to you today because I love you. And because I want you to know what God says about how we should manage our wealth. This first statement is for me, but this is something I believe. I think how we manage our wealth says a lot about the condition of our heart. How we manage our wealth says a lot about the condition of our heart. It is tax return season, or tax paying season for some. Got more ideas on the tax paying season than the tax income season. People use their tax returns for a number of things. I know dealerships, they are trying to do sales right now in order to get people to buy cars with their tax returns. Some people put it towards their house. Some people put it into savings. Some people put it towards home improvements. Some people just buy what they want with it. I believe how someone uses their money, including their tax refund, says a lot about a person. If you have needs, if your house needs to be improved, by all means, meet those needs. But if you have needs, but you spend it on your wants, I would show that shows a lack of wisdom, which is a sign that a heart that needs to change. And God does not shy away from talking about how we should manage our wealth in the Bible. In fact, how we manage our wealth is mentioned somewhere around 2,500 times in the Bible. So it's clearly important to Him. Proverbs 3:9 tells us that we should honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all of your produce. We should choose to manage our money in a way that honors the Lord. Not follow the ways of the world, but follow the ways of the Lord. So Jesus is teaching in Luke chapter 12. That's where we're going to be parked at today. He's teaching in Luke chapter 12. And we're told in verse 13 that someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." So he wants part of the inheritance that was left to his brother. Now his brother's probably the older brother, so he got the inheritance. Well, this brother's saying, "Hey, teacher, tell him to share it with me." And Jesus said, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" He says, "It's not my job to judge or to negotiate between the two of you. It's not my job to get you to get this man to hand this money over to you." Because really, the man's not looking for Jesus to be a judge or an arbiter between them. He's looking for Jesus to order this guy, to order his brother, to give him some money, to give him some of that wealth. And so Jesus, as he often does, he sees past the immediate situation that's been brought up, and he sees an issue at work in this man's heart. So this next statement from Jesus is this, verse 15. It teaches to the whole crowd now. He says, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." How embarrassing it would have been for this man who have come up and said, Jesus, tell my brother to give me some of that inheritance. And then Jesus says, guys, watch out for greed. He sees that this man is greedy at heart. He just wants money. He just wants possessions. And so Jesus uses this man's situation to illustrate a point by telling a parable about greed. And it's very appropriate that we talk about greed today because it was a problem then, and it's a problem today. 1992, there was a study done. Americans were polled on what they were willing to do for $10 million. Two-thirds of Americans polled would agree to at least one of the following. 25% of those polled said they would abandon their entire family for $10 million. 25% said they would abandon their church. 23% they said that they would become prostitutes for a week or more. 16% said they would give up their American citizenship. 16% said they would leave their spouse. 10% said they would withhold testimony and let a murderer go free. 7% would kill a stranger. And 3% would put their children up for adoption. All for $10 million. Greed. As we prepare to dive into this parable, let's define greed. And then we'll work through it as we work through this parable. So here's my overarching thesis statement. Greed is the sinful posture of the heart that results in selfishly pursuing things of this world because we are short-sighted. We're going to cover the words sin, selfish, and short-sighted as we work through this parable today. Greed is the sinful posture of the heart that results in selfishly pursuing things of this world because we are short-sighted. Continuing on, Jesus tells them this parable in verses 16 through 18. He says, the ground of a certain rich man. So right there, this man has been defined as rich. This man has plenty of money. He has plenty of the things he needs. It yields an abundant harvest, which means it's gone above and beyond what he could ever ask for or imagined. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. So if he is having to tear down his barns that are already built, he said there's no place to store his crops. But then we're told in the very next part, he has barns, but he's having to tear down those barns in order to build bigger barns. So we know that the barns that he built, and I've got a feeling this guy was smart because he would not have become rich if he did not know how to manage his stuff to some degree. I'm sure he built barns that were big enough to cover his needs originally. And so the fact that he's having to tear down these barns and build bigger barns means that what he is getting now is above and beyond what he needs. And so rather than choosing to do something else with that stuff, he's trying to figure out, hey, how can I keep all of this that I have? Now some would say he's just being smart. Jesus would say, no, this is not the way of God. The first thing I want to talk to you about is that greed is a sin. This man wanting to keep all of his harvest, it doesn't seem wrong on the surface. But if he already had everything he needed, and if God had blessed him abundantly, why does he not choose to try to help out some other people with this money or with this grain? So going back to Leviticus 19, 9 through 10, this is the Old Testament law. And while we're looking at the specific law, what I want to ultimately look at is the spirit behind this law. It says this, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field, or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. So one of the instructions that God gave to the Israelites was to not take everything out of their field. Leave some of it in their field, especially those on the edges of your field. Leave it. Don't gather your gleanings, and don't go over your vineyard a second time to get the ones that have fallen. Leave them. And who are you leaving them for? You're leaving them to help the poor and the foreigner. So the foreigner would have been the ones traveling through, and they would need food. They didn't have McDonald's and Burger King and all the restaurants back then. And so this was their way of gathering food. God wanted his people to be people that provided for others. That's the spirit behind that law. And then you look at this man whose fields have produced an abundant crop. His barns are already filled, which means he already has everything he needs. And instead of choosing to leave some of that grain in the field for people to come by or to gather it, better yet, gather it and give it to others, what he chooses to do is to tear down his barns, which, by the way, is going to cost money, and build bigger ones. Jesus said this is greed. And greed is a sin. Greed today often displays itself through love of money and love of possessions. One of the verses that you probably have heard before, 1 Timothy 6:10, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people who are eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. I could teach a whole sermon off of that passage because there is so much there, that one verse. The love of money, yes, it's a sin in itself, but Paul is wanting Timothy to know it's a root of all kinds of evil. A lot of the things that happen in our world comes from a love of money. We live in a greedy country. We live in a greedy culture. A lot of that comes from people wanting to gain money. Paul says even back then, some people who were eager for money, interesting, maybe they didn't have money. They were eager for money, so they were willing to work. They were willing to do whatever it took. They were willing to do things that was against their conscience, maybe. They were willing to do whatever it took to get money. He says they wandered from the faith. And this is interesting. This is the consequence of a love of money, is that they've pierced themselves with many griefs. I could go and tell you right now, if you're greedy and you have a love of money, you're going to have a life that is full of grief. That word pierce themselves, I picture someone stabbing somebody or shooting an arrow. They're literally stabbing themselves with grief because of their love of money. Today we have a love of possessions, and they did back then too. That's why Jesus, before he teaches this parable, he says, watch out, people. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. He said it means nothing. So why are we so focused on it? See, greed is about getting as much as you can. I was taught in my classes about how someone who is controlled by the flesh, who's controlled by their sin nature, their heart has been turned inward. So imagine a heart, that's a heart, but their heart is turned inward. They only care about themselves. And so when someone is struggling with greed, that's a sign that their heart is turned inward, because they're so focused on getting possessions for themselves. They're so focused on making money. And what God desires for us to do is open up our heart to him and to others, and we'll get to that. But a greedy heart is a heart that is turned inward. It's about someone focusing on getting as much as they can in their life. And I could talk about the reasons why they're trying to get more, and we'll mention it later, but a lot of it's because they're trying to lean on things for their source of happiness, their source of joy, and it leaves them empty. But listen, our world cultivates a greedy heart. Commercials on TV are always trying to get us to buy the newest and best things. In our culture, rich people are elevated, while people who live a simple life with only a few things are overlooked. The life of an abundance of possessions is promoted, while the life of simplicity is passed over. The culture is trying to push this greedy heart on us. And what we not only have the culture trying to encourage us to have a greedy heart, but we have a sin nature. We have a fleshly side of us that's already greedy at its core. We have a fleshly side of us, a sin nature in us that wants to get. We want to bring things in and not have to give anything out in return. So we end up focusing on what we can get next. And we try to find that some sense of happiness or joy from our possessions, and ultimately we won't. Having greed in our heart is a sin, make no mistake. Second thing about greed is that it is selfish. It is selfish. Luke 12, 18 through 19. This man says, "This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain." Verse 19. "And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry." Now we have the reason why he doesn't want to give that grain away. It's because he wants to be lazy for the next few years. He wants to take life easy. He wants to eat, drink, and be merry. Notice who he is not thinking of. Anyone else. It's all about himself. And that's how greed does. Greed results in us acting selfishly. We make our life all about ourselves. We don't think about our family. We don't think about our friends. We don't think about our kids. And we especially don't think about the needy in society, because we are so focused on what we want, we start to climb over everyone else to get. We selfishly pursue material things and money. We think about one person and one person only, me. Example with money. I know people who will work. They'll work extra hours just for more money. But that money is not being used to meet their needs in the present. That money's not being used to invest in future generations. No, that money is used to buy more possessions that you don't really need. Your barns are already full. And yet you're choosing to work extra hours, which, by the way, takes away time from your family. You're choosing to work extra hours in order to gain more money, in order to buy things that you want that you don't really need. Going to possessions. People have a house to live in, a car to drive, means to communicate, food, water, etc. Their needs are taken care of. But they may not have a savings account at all for emergency situations. I've heard, and Randy, you might be able to help, or Wes, or Beverly, because Beverly's the money manager in that relationship. How much money do you need to save up, according to Dave Ramsey, for your emergency situation? $1,000. What about not in debt? 3 months? 3 to 6 months worth of expenses saved up, so that if something happened to you, your bills could be paid for, things could be taken care of. We have people who are spending money and they don't have anything saved up. We have people who are wasting money, buying things they don't need, buying cars that are too expensive for them to buy, buying all these other stuff, and they don't have any savings for themselves, and they especially don't have a savings account for their kids to help them get started on a good foot in adulthood. Instead of saving their money, we have people who spend every penny they get getting updated things, new cell phones, new cars, new clothes. And then one pet peeve of mine is people buy items that are very rarely used. Why are we spending hundreds of dollars on things that we'll never use? And it's especially bad, it's especially unwise when people are buying possessions but can't even afford to pay for their own needs. It's especially bad when we are choosing to spend all this money on this other stuff, but we can't afford to pay our power bill, we can't afford food, we can't afford transportation, we can't afford our house. And even worse, there are people who are in debt who are still buying things that they want, even though when you are in debt, that means you literally don't have the money to buy anything else because you're in the negatives. It makes literally no sense at all to be buying new things when you are not able to make ends meet. So then the question becomes, why are we buying things when it literally makes no sense? It's because we're thinking with a worldly mind rather than a wise mind. Because we are following the ways of this world, we're searching for happiness and material things rather than God. And it'll always leave us empty. Why? Because often we are short-sighted and we're not looking ahead to things. That's the last word, short-sighted. Luke 12:20. This man has saved up his grain. He's built new barns. He's tearing the old ones down. And look at what God says to him. You fool. That's why I'm preaching hard today, because if God is calling someone a fool, then they must be a fool. That's a serious thing. That's not how God normally talks to people. And so for God to be telling this man, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? He says, you're a fool, dude. You're a fool. You are choosing to save up all this stuff. You're choosing to spend all this extra money building a new barn to store your excess grain. But guess what? You're going to die this very night. And all of that you gained, all that you've gotten, it means nothing to you now. We're the same way. We have fools in today's society. We have fools in the church who are choosing to be greedy by gaining things that are temporary, things that we aren't going to be able to take with us, things that mean nothing in the long run. You think God's going to ask you when you die, how much money did you have? That's how we determine who's going to heaven. You think that when you die, he's going to say, what car did you drive in 2023? Think he's going to ask you how big your house was? Think he's going to ask you what cell phone you had? None of that matters at all in the long run. None of that matters at all in regards to our eternal life. So why do we focus on them so much? Greed. So ask yourselves, am I greedy? Most of us, our initial answer would be no. So I've got some deeper probing questions I want you to ask yourself. After I buy something, shortly after, do I begin thinking about what the next thing is that I could buy? After I get something, am I immediately beginning to think, I could get these shoes, I could get this next, I could get this car next, I could get this next. Am I immediately looking at the next thing I could buy? The reason why I'm asking that question is because I've been there, where I'm searching for happiness in things. And so I get one thing, and guess what? That thing eventually does not make me as happy as it did when I first got it. So then I begin looking at something else to make me feel happy again. Second question, if someone told me that for the rest of my life that I would have all my needs provided for, but I could not buy anything else I wanted, would that make me sad? That you would have food, water, transportation, a house, everything you needed. Ways to communicate, so you'll have a phone. Clothes. But you couldn't buy that new car you want, or you couldn't buy that new cell phone you want, or you couldn't buy that new video game you want. Would you be okay with that? With my surplus money or possessions, do I look for ways to spend it for myself? When we have extra money, when you get your tax refund, obviously you can live without that money because you've been living without it for the last year. When you get that tax refund back, do you immediately look at how you can spend it on something for yourself? Or does it cross your mind, maybe I need to save it for my kids. Maybe I need to save it for future generations of my family. Let's talk about how God thinks, because right here, all those questions, it's very easy to answer yes to any of those questions. And if you have answered yes to any of those questions, you probably have greed in your heart. And who can blame you? Our society wants us to keep buying things. Our society tells us to get what we want when we want it. Our society says that if you earned your money, then spend it for yourself. But just because society says that, that's not an excuse, because Paul tells us, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Who does the renewing? God does. We are not called to follow the pattern of this world. We're called to follow God. That doesn't mean we excuse ourselves for having greed in our hearts. So let's talk about how God thinks and ultimately God's cure for greed. This man in this parable, he has died. And guess what? All that extra grain means nothing. One of the commentaries I read was talking about what an empty life this guy had at the end. His barns may have been full, but his heavenly barns were empty. See, Jesus says in Luke 12, 21, this is how it would be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. It's going to be God telling them, you're a fool. Can you imagine getting to heaven and God saying, you fool? He says, but this is how it's going to be. People who store up for themselves things here on earth, but is not rich towards God. Well, that immediately took me to Matthew 6, 19 through 20. Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasure in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. He says, don't focus on getting treasures here on earth. Don't focus on gaining stuff down here. He says, focus on storing up treasures in heaven. What does that mean? That means we make sure our heavenly barns are full. And the way we make our heavenly barns full is by following God down here. It's by managing our possessions and our wealth in a way that glorifies God. Let's talk about what that means. The cure for greed, three words, gratitude, generosity, and a God-filled life. The cure for greed is gratitude, generosity, and a God-filled life. First, let's talk about gratitude. This goes against the modern-day thinking of being of the modern day thinking of always get more. When you have gratitude in your heart, you're thankful for what you do have. This man could have been thankful for what he had, and if he was, think about all the people he could have helped with that excess grain. We have got to be thankful for what we do have. We need to be content. That's what the author of Hebrews says in Hebrews 13:5. He says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. How many of us are content with what we have? In our culture today, that is not something that is encouraged. And our culture today is all about getting more. And if we as the people of God continue to follow the ways of this world, we're not storing up treasures in heaven. He says, be content with what you have. And why can you be content with what you have? Because God has said, never will I leave you and never will I forsake you. He says, you can be content with what you have because you have God. You have God, and if you have God, you have everything you need. See, I think we need to get back to the spiritual practice of simplicity. You don't have to have everything. It is healthy for your spiritual life to tell yourself no when you want something. It is healthy for you to say, yes, that looks great, I want it, and then to say no. What that does is it pushes back against your sinful nature. It pushes back against the flesh. And then you begin to learn to live in that. And when you learn to live free of that constant desire of wanting more, you start to live a good life. You don't have to have everything you really want. I have a 2008 Ford Fusion with 130,000 miles. Have I mentioned to Sarah about getting a new car? Absolutely. Something better on gas mileage. Something, I mean, it doesn't look great on the inside, and it doesn't look great on the outside. But then I ask myself, does it get me to point A to point B reliably? It does. I don't need to get a new car, waste all that money when my car is perfectly fine. That's a spiritual practice of simplicity. Would I want one of the fancy ones that beeps at me when I start? That's what Elizabeth does. It beeps at her when she gets off the road, and that happens a lot. I don't want that either. Well, yours would beep at you all the time. It would probably lock you out of the vehicle. Yeah, that's right. Could I get a fancy car like that? Yeah, me and Sarah have the money. We could do that. But why? Why would I waste my money when my car gets me from point A to point B? When I could be using that money to save up for Elijah, so that when Elijah turns 18 years old, we're able to give him $15,000, $20,000, as my parents did to me, help him pay for college, help him get started on the right foot. I would much rather do that than get a new car now. Second thing we do is we give. First, we give to God. Hold on, we'll get to that in a second. Oh, Zooms. I didn't know I could do that. Give to God. First thing you do is you give 10% of your income to God. What I'm getting ready to teach you is the 10-10-80 principle. 10-10-80 principle. First, you give 10% of your gross income to God. Going back to that first point, or that first verse we read about honor the Lord with your wealth. It talks about the first fruits of your produce. That means first, from the top, when you earn money, 10% of that gross income goes to God. 10% of that gross income is given to God. It's called a tithe. I've not talked about that in like a year, but last year when I did talk about it, you would not believe how many people came up to me and talked about how exciting it was for them. And there's one person in particular I'm thinking about that they have never given in their life, but they've started giving, and they said they are looking forward to giving at the next Sunday. It's such a freeing thing to give 10% of your income to God. It's a freeing thing to know that you're honoring God with the first fruits of your wealth. But something else I want to talk about, it's given to future generations, and I already kind of mentioned it. When you save money, you are giving money to future generations of your family. The 10-10-80 principle says, give 10% to God, save 10%, and when you save 10%, guess what you're doing? You're giving to future generations, and then you can spend the remaining 80% on whatever you need. And even your wants. If you have the money, if your needs are met, and you want some things, I'm not saying you can't ever get what you want. But what I am saying is that when you are getting what you want, when you can't even afford what you need, there's a problem. When you are getting what you want and you're not investing in future generations and you're not giving to God, that is not the way that God has called us to manage our money. I think our goal as parents, some of you don't have kids, some of you do, but I think it's our goal as parents, it should be to help our kids to get off to a good start in life. And especially not to leave our kids with a bunch of debt that they're going to have to pay. And we don't need to leave it to government to forgive that debt either, because guess what? Someone has to pay for that. Save money so that your family doesn't have to take a loan out for your funeral. Save money so that any bills that you have left when you die can be paid. Save money for your kids. Set up a fund for them. Help them get started on the right foot in life. I think if I asked anyone in here that had kids, I'd ask you, do you love them? Yeah, I think you do. Then I want you to think about this. Every penny you spend now on things you don't need is a penny taken away from them that could help them get started on a great foot in life. My parents saved money for us. My dad would put back, I don't know how much he put back, but it's somewhere like $100 a month. And so when I turned 18, 20, when we was buying our house, we had plenty of money for our down payment. We had plenty of money to do upgrades to our house. That's because my parents, they were not short-sighted. They looked long-term. And you might be thinking, well, you know, that doesn't sound like you're giving. Yes, they gave their money to me. And God's going to honor them for that. They chose to see long-term. So many parents today, we see in the moment. We see what we want right now, and we get what we want. And then in some cases, your life could be demanded of you. As soon as your child turns 18, your life could be demanded of you. And are they going to have to pay off your house for you now? Are you going to leave that debt to them? Are they going to have to pay off your vehicles? Are they going to have to pay all this stuff? You're leaving them starting out with a negative rather than a positive. We can choose to give to future generations of our family by saving at least 10% by starting a fund to them. That is giving that glorifies God, that stores up treasure in heaven. And then finally, give to those in need. Proverbs 19:17. Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward them for what they have done. Right there. When you give to the poor, you're going to be rewarded in heaven. In fact, you're lending to the Lord. You're giving that money to the Lord. You're storing up rewards in heaven. Imagine if the man in this parable did it. Imagine if the man in this parable took all of his abundant possessions and gave it to people in need. Do you think God would have said, "You fool"? He said, "Come here, servant. Come here, son. You have followed me. You have helped others. You have built up treasures in heaven." How many of us could be in the same boat of that man that right now, if our life was demanded of us tonight, he would call us a fool as well because of the way we managed our money? Or how many of us are storing up treasures in heaven by choosing to give 10% to God, give to our kids, to future generations, and to give unto those in need? 1 John 3:17 says this: "If anyone has material possessions and see a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person?" Giving is a sign of a healthy heart, a heart that has been given over to God. Goes back to Jesus telling us to love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you were in your neighbor's position, what would you hope others would do to you? And then finally, the third thing that is the cure to greed, and it's the most important, is a God-filled heart. If your life is filled with God, you have no room for greed. You can be intentionally grateful. You can be intentionally generous. But it takes a transformation of the heart to truly overcome greed. There's people who give money to church. Not necessarily in our church, but there's people who give money to church not because they want to give 10% to God. It's because they want to be in good with the pastor and they want to have power in the political dynamics of the church. That's greed. That's a self-righteous heart. There are people who publicly give to those in need, who give to the poor in order to gain recognition. That is greed. You can be greedy for attention. You can be greedy for power. Greed can show itself in more ways than just possessions and money. So to intentionally overcome greed, it's going to take God transforming your heart. It's going to take us letting him in. It's going to take us seeking him out to purify our hearts of all greed. And then we have to take advantage of the opportunities he puts in front of us. We have to intentionally follow him. And if we do, he'll purify us from all unrighteousness. We read that verse last week. You know, I thought about this. If God was greedy, we would never have received grace. If God was greedy, he wouldn't have went to the grave. If God was greedy, he never would have given us the gift of life. But God wasn't greedy, so why are we? John Wesley understood this. John Wesley believed in God's way of managing his finances. John Wesley's a single man, so he didn't need to save money for future generations. And during his time, a single man could live comfortably on about 30 pounds a year. That was their money at the time. John Wesley believed that, and he beat that, and he lived on 28 pounds a year. So one year he earned 30 pounds. So what did he do with the remaining two? He gave them away. Next year, his income doubled, and he chose to still live off of that 28 pounds, and he gave the other 32 pounds away. He gave away more money than he kept. How many people can say that today? Not many. One year, so John Wesley, of course, he started the Methodist movement, and he's going around preaching, and I'm sure people gave him money. But one year, his income was a little over 1,400 pounds. He chose to live on 30. And he gave away nearly 1,400. Because he had no family to care for, he had no need for savings. He was afraid of laying up treasures on earth. So the money went out in charity as quickly as it came in. One of his writings, he said that he never had more than 100 pounds at any one time. Guarantee you his barns were full. Why? Because he gave. He was thankful for what he did have. He was thankful that God provided him with the 28 or 30 that he needed. And he chose to give the excess away. I bet you God didn't tell him he was a fool for the way he managed his money. That's an example that we are called to follow. And ultimately, God's example is the one that we are called to follow. And God wasn't greedy. So why are we? Let's go back to those questions as we end today. After I buy something, shortly after, do I begin thinking about what the next thing is that I could buy? Or am I thinking about saving my money for future generations of my family? If someone told me that for the rest of my life I'd have all my needs provided for, but I could not buy anything else I wanted, would that make me sad or would I be content? We could even put the word grateful. And finally, with my surplus money or possessions, do I look for ways to spend it for myself or for others? Lord, as we come to you in prayer today and as we prepare to leave, Lord, that was a hard word probably for people in this room to hear. But Lord, I'm thankful that you choose to show us grace, that you choose to show us mercy, and that you choose to continue to desire to work in us. And Lord, I ask you today that you would transform our hearts. Lord, it's one thing for people to hear this word and for it to land on a hard heart and for them not to respond. It's another thing for us to hear this word and want to change. But Lord, that ultimately takes the transformation of the heart that comes from you. So Lord, I pray that we would all be intentional about taking advantage of the opportunities that you place in front of us. Lord, I pray that we would be intentional about being thankful for what you have given us, and that we would choose to give. That we would choose to give our 10% to you. That we would choose to give to our future generations of our family. And that we would choose to give to others. Lord, I thank you that you do provide for our needs. God, I thank you that you are at work in our life. And Lord, I pray that we would choose to glorify you in everything that we do, including the way that we manage our money. And so, Lord, as we leave this place today, I ask that you'll just continue to be with us, continue to work in us, and continue to work through us as we seek to glorify you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. That's how we're ending today, because ultimately the form of worship that I want to come out of this is not singing. I want it to be that you manage your money God's way. Amen. You are dismissed. Thank you for being here.